broadcasting from AnnieUpMagazine.com in Tampa Bay, Florida,
with your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
July 11th, 2008, it's time to Ante Up. Hey, Scott, I got a joke for you.
You got a joke for me?
I have a joke for you. Why did the elephant stop playing poker in the jungle?
Wow. See, you're throwing so much information at me. I didn't realize there was a poker room that opened in the jungle yet. And now all of a sudden
you've never been to the
playing.
Jungle room?
I'm guessing because there had to be some kind of Tarzan messed with the RCG.
No, because there's too many cheetahs.
Oh! That makes sense.
Come on.
Yeah,
I was reading the kids' book over the weekend, so I thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah. Remind me to laugh next week.
Oh, man. Well, it's great to have you back. And we have a very special guest with us in the
studio.
Yes,
who's
today.
Our special guest today?
Yeah, where is he?
Yeah.
Is he coming anytime soon? Because I'd like to meet him.
Special Ed. Hey, Special Ed, why don't you tell us how your Vegas trip was?
So it's great that Mike Fasto is with us. A lot of our listeners worried that he wasn't going to catch the bus.
Blasphemy. Of course
he
was
the times and went on her own. And
I'm making the transition.
They thought we were going to throw him under the bus.
He was a stowaway, so we unpacked him today, and here he is.
Well, it's great to have you guys back. I know that it was everything you had hoped it would be. Your dreams were all smashed when you were out there, but
got
off to a good start.
We had some good success. Mike a lot more than me, but we'll talk about that more in our main topic.
Right, exactly.
The reason we are out there is the World Series is going on.
Yep.
And actually, it's almost over.
Yeah, it is now.
We're now into the main event.
Yep.
And it's a record-breaking one this year, Chris.
Of course it is. Because and, poker sucks. It's going downhill. It's plateaued.
Right. No one plays anymore.
No one plays anymore. It's terrible. It's gone the way of the dodo.
But they set records this year for most total registrants, largest total prize pool, most countries and territories represented.
What's a territory?
And I don't have you know, only six continents is all they can muster. Which is the same. They're on equal par with the Ante Up.
Hey, we got to get on that marketing wagon and get that seventh continent.
It's a race now to see who can find somebody in Antarctica first, or the W South.
I bet we win that race. So what's a territory, really? I mean, like when a cat marks his territory, did somebody come from that area? I don't understand what that means.
Probably, yeah, that could be.
Yeah,
that's like Guam.
Yeah, maybe Guam would be another one. Yeah, that's probably
a lot of cats marking their territory in Guam.
Yeah, Guam's probably the answer that Alex Trebek would be accepting, not so much the cat box. But yeah, you try that.
What is Guam?
And a bunch of other records, too. But it was a madhouse out there, I thought. And not just a WSOP, but I thought entire Vegas was packed this time. But
I thought it was. I didn't have any trouble getting into any games, less so than before.
No, I don't mean that, but I mean just walking up and down the strip in downtown, I was like, geez, get out of my way.
Well, I did notice it was strange. Wednesday night, it was like the town was empty. And then Thursday, it was like the town was full. It's like I was there for starting on a Sunday, so it was nice and empty for the first 4 days of the trip. And then it really got jammed up toward the end when the weekend people come in. Yeah, on the 4th of July. I thought they did a better job this year inside there, and they got rid of the tent and all that stuff.
Excellent.
So
my only big complaint this year is that the tent is cursed. All right?
Uh-huh.
You know, last year I played out there in the shoe event and lasted like, 16 minutes or something ridiculous.
You didn't even get to finish your Diet Pepsi that I brought you.
Exactly, exactly. And Diet Pepsi brought to me for free. That's key to the story, all right? Because I'm out there in the media room. The vastly improved media room. And I give Seth and Nolan and all the WSOP media people props. They did a good job on setting us up this year. But they did take away our free sodas.
Mm.
Not a problem. Mm. You don't need to give me free sodas. But, you know, I get up. Working hard out there for the Ante Up Nation.
Right.
Tired. I decide I need something more than aqua. And I walk out to the Pee Wee Big Tent because it's still there, but now they put the poker kitchen out there.
Oh, okay.
And I go to pick up a Coke, and they don't have the 20-ounce bottles, Chris.
Oh.
You know, those are kind of like standard issue now, right?
Yes, yeah.
I don't know how to live on just 12 ounces. But I'm like, all right, fine. I'll just get a can. Walk up to the nice little lady at the checkout counter.
Right.
And the little digital readout on the checkout.
Yeah.
2.50.
For 12 ounces?
And I looked down and I'm like, no, seriously, I just have the can here.
Not the six
pack. I thought maybe she thought I had a pizza or something behind it. But no, just a can of Coke, Pepsi, whatever it is. It wasn't even like Monster or anything. It wasn't like an energy drink that I snuck in there.
Oh, my God.
$2.50.
Wow.
$2.50. All right. I have just come to the realization that I have to pay $2 for a 20-ounce bottle of Coke in retail establishment.
Wow.
Now you're asking me to pay an extra 50 cents for 8 fewer ounces?
Oh, my God.
And the clincher to the story, Chris, when I gave my money over and she gave me change, there was a tip jar. A tip jar.
Let me tell you something. You don't tip the cashier there. You leave her in your will.
Exactly. Exactly.
So let me ask you, you think they just got like the room service menu mixed up with the... I mean, that's ridiculous.
Crazy. But I tell you, I had one.
Of course you had one.
One was it. I never went back to the Booker Kitchen.
Of course. How could you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's ridiculous.
All right, but we'll have more funny stories in the main topic, but there's a couple interesting things that came out of the WSOP that I thought we could talk about. And our good friends at the AP were out there covering it very well, and they had this interesting thing to say about the last person to get in the main event. Okay. The very last person. More than 6,000 people this year.
Right.
Eugene Yannett had spent the night drinking after a chess tournament in Philadelphia, and airport officials would not let him on his flight to Las Vegas because he was snookered.
Snockered.
Snockered. Snookered is what you do in pool.
Oh, that's that pool game, right? Well, maybe he was drinking and playing that, too, after he finished his chess tournament. Now, Mike, you played chess.
Yeah.
A lot of drinking in chess?
Not too much, no.
I'm sure Boris Spassky
he likes the wine.
Yeah.
We know that Boris Spassky likes the wine. And yeah, well, now that you mention it, a lot of the Russian players from the 60s and 70s, there was a guy named Mikhail Tal who was world champion for a year, and he enjoyed a sip now and then, and but in general, no, it's more like the chess game is over of the tournament and you go, and these guys go back and play Dungeons and Dragons or whatever it is they do.
They roll the power cube or whatever.
Reasonably priced sodas, too.
Yes.
All right, well, not Eugene Yannett. He pleaded with the airport officials, you know, those very mild-mannered TSA people.
Right.
And he said that, quote, I kept drinking all night, and then they wouldn't let me on the plane. And this is a 24-year-old, of course. I showed him my ticket, and it's like, come on, I got to play in the World Series of Poker. They said, no, no, no. but he finally got to town, and he called the WSOP from the airport just as the tournament officials were getting ready to void his entry.
Wow.
So he got in, and of course, I don't know how he did, but I'm sure he's passed out.
It's probably the chip leader.
Well, you know, speaking of chip leaders, too, at the World Series, I think it might have been after day two or after day 1B or whatever it was, but did you notice that one of the chip leaders was named Steve Austin?
I did.
I thought that would be funny. If that guy won, he'd rename himself from the $6 million man to the $9 million man. But I guess he's a good player. I mean, he's got a page on Poker Pages or whatever. He's called The Natural.
Yeah, that's the wrong nickname for him.
Yeah, he should be called the Bionic
Steve Austin,
Man.
He's not Robert Redford.
How is he not the Bionic Man? Exactly. Yeah. He's not Robert Redford. It doesn't make any sense.
But
that
Stone
was pretty
Cold.
Hilarious. Hey, you know, when I was a kid, I was a member of the Bionic Man Steve Austin fan club.
Were you?
Yep.
Did you have the little doll?
I did have the doll,
yeah.
And it had the action, you know, the action figure. It was like an enlarged action figure, and it had like the magnifying bionic eye that
yes,
you could look through.
Yes.
And I had the little card that you put in my fake wallet that said that I was a member of the Bionic Man Nation. It was great.
Were you able to take Lindsay Wagner to prom?
No, but she did come to my fifth grade graduation.
Did she?
Yeah, she was on my arm. It was a great time.
Very good.
I just thought, wow, Steve Austin, The Natural. That's not too natural. That's very unnatural, that nickname.
Well, speaking of real live heroes,
right.
The big time pros had a lot of fun this year. They did very well. Lots of reasons why people say that maybe the structure changes helped them.
Right.
But one thing never changes about these big time pros. They are all degenerate gamblers.
Everyone.
They're all betting. It's all side bets to them.
Yep,
all right.
All prop bets.
And of course, AP did a great story on. It has a quote from Phil Locke here that says, "You know, when you've been playing poker this long, a $10,000 buy-in is too small of an entry for them to get excited."
Oh my God.
Too small. It has to be like $100,000 for them to actually feel pain.
So well, why don't they put us in?
So they have to do these side bets.
Yeah.
And so they had a quote from Barry Greenstein, who said he was cheering on Eric Lindgren at the final table at the horse tournament until his girlfriend reminded him that he was going to lose 40 grand. 40 grand if Eric won. So he had to change his cheering. The guy had so many side bets, he forgot what he was betting on.
He's rooting for the wrong guy. Unbelievable.
And he went on to say that the reason he played in so many events this year is because he had side bets on him winning a couple bracelets.
Wow.
So he had to play so he could collect on that.
Which he didn't, though.
And, of course, we knew about Phil Ivey's big bet that everybody talked about then.
So didn't you guys have a World Series? Well, not really World Series, but like a last longer.
Yeah, kinda? Scott was the one bet that Scott won all week.
It was the only bet I won all week, yes.
He lasted longer in the Golden Nugget Horse Tournament.
Wow.
By about a half an hour, thereabouts.
That's the only thing you won out there, huh, Scott?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
$10. We had a $10 last longer.
And Visa has already garnished that $10.
Vina.
Yeah.
Vina.
But Negreanu said, Daniel Negreanu, who got in on this.
Yeah, we know who he is.
But he got in on this Ivy bet, all right. And he said, not everything is fair game in these side bets.
No, really. There's actually a limit. There's some sort of protocol that they won't.
Well, and this comes after the part of the story where Esfandiari and Locke had a $1,000 bet on whether Esfandiari's assistant would, what time she would get back with their lunch.
Oh, jeez.
He won that.
He won that.
But Negreanu says, not everything's fair game. He does not bet on death or marriage. Mm. Probably a good bet since he's divorced now.
A lot of people bet on marriage, though. Phil Gordon has a bet with Robert Williamson III that his marriage wouldn't last 5 years or whatever, and it's like for 50 grand or something.
Yeah.
So a lot of people do that. You're rooting for divorce. That's hilarious.
I got a side bet on how long Annie Up Magazine will be going with somebody in the building here. We won't say what the over-under is, but...
Well, we will stay in business.
Can we get a little girl action on that?
Just to make sure you lose.
How do you know I'm not betting on the over?
Oh, okay. Well, tell us what it is, because we'll go bankrupt if you're betting on the over.
I just made that up.
Well, and we were... Mike and I both got to play with a guy in the Nugget tournament who was telling me the story about how he entered the Orleans tournament for... I don't know, like $500, some small tournament.
On the mic, Scott. Stay on the mic.
But it was a rebuy tournament, and he had to rebuy a considerable amount of time just to win the last longer bet, which was a lot bigger money than what he would win in the tournament.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Crazy sick.
That's hilarious.
Crazy sick.
Wow. All right. So, you know, we only have an hour today, so let's move on to some other stuff. You know, while you guys were gone, I was all alone. And I was like, you know what? I got to play some poker, and my buddies aren't here, so I might as well go down Derby Lane.
Right.
They were spreading a 5-10 no-limit game. Now,
it's pretty standard, right?
Yeah.
Except for
the fact that you can only buy in for $100, and everybody at the table had $3,000. I went there at like 4:30, and everybody there had stacks of yellows. And for those who don't know, who've never been to Derby Lane, the yellows are $25. So it was just massive. Guys had grand, and a grand or $2,000 or $3,000 in front of them, and you sit down with $100 and they're raising to 50 preflop. You know, what are you going to do? So I put this on our forum, on AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum, talk about it because it's Derby Lane. And everybody, some people are like, yeah, I wish I can get into a game. I'm like, what? So what do you guys think? Do you think it's just insane to sit down? You're hoping to at least take half your bankroll with you and like, actually almost look forward to losing like $300 or $400 before you hit a huge pot.
Well, because you're getting money on the table, so it doesn't
matter,
right?
That's what I mean. But still, you got to be kidding me.
How much is, I mean, to buy into that game, what would you really expect to be the buy-in if it was a realistic buy-in?
Well, I mean, a 2-5 game is like
300. Yeah.
So a 5-10 has got to be, you got to be looking at least
600.
At least, no, even more, way more than that. 5-10.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like 1,500
to sit.
To sit. I probably don't need that much.
All right, 1,000. You want 100 big bets, so 1,000. If you're sitting at a 50-cent dollar, you buy 100. So you're sitting at $5, $10, you buy 1,000.
Well, I guess the strategy would be you'd sit down, you'd pick a hand to shove with, to double up.
Sure,
and,
of course.
And you're going to pick it pretty quickly.
Yeah, because as soon as you sit down, you're already down to $95. You have 9.5 bets left.
Yeah.
Right. It's ridiculous.
Well, was it a shove fest when you were watching it?
Well, I only watched for a few minutes because I had some other business there. But what I did watch, I was just like, I'm not sitting in this game. And it wasn't really a shove fest because those guys had been there all day.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have a lot of money.
Yeah, they've got the deep stacks now.
when I was leaving, I ran to somebody I knew, and I was talking as I was standing next to the table, and I was talking to him, and I said, look at this game. You can't even get in. A guy at the table turned around to me, and meanwhile, he had like $3,000 in front of me, and I had already seen him there before. I did my business before I played. And he says, I've only been here 45 minutes. And I'm like, you're such a liar, dude. I've been here an hour, and you had a stack that was the size of, you know, Egypt. So I don't know. But I would never play in that game ever.
It just seems bizarre.
Yeah, I can't believe they're spreading it. I mean, but,
and, no, but people love it. Yeah. And other card rooms in Florida are doing it, too.
That's the other thing, too. And the list was continued the on the – yeah, it was continued on the next, like, column. It was so long. I was like, that's insane. So, anyway.
Well, what's next? I mean, they got the up the ante, right? It's going to be a $25.50 no limit.
$25.50. $100 buy-in. Oh, man.
Or even better, it'd be like those full tilt tournaments that are like, you know, 100 chips.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or 300 chips.
I mean, what about a 50-100 game? Get in there and just try to double up with your first one.
Oh, man. That's right. One person will probably win a grand.
How about you just make it into a bingo game and just be
done. Well, that's what it is. I mean, 5-10 with a $100 buy-in is a bingo.
That is definitely what it is.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Daniel Agronu before. I noticed that on the PPA now is offering his column with their newsletter. I don't know if it's just for a temporary basis or for people who will pay the full initiation or whatever. But, I mean, I didn't read it all very carefully, but I just want to let everybody know that if you're a member of the PPA, you get that letter with their – you get that column with their newsletter. He's syndicated around the country or whatever.
It was about how to play tournaments. And
so you read it? Okay.
You're depending on your stack and your position and – different strategies.
So that's good
for
to know.
Adjusting your game as the tournament progresses.
He's a good writer. I read obviously his Deuce to Seven chapter and Doyle Brunson's second super system, but now also I have his power strategy for poker for Hold'em book. It just came out. A lot of different pros wrote chapters in it, like David Williams and Todd Brunson wrote one for that. Evelyn Ng and
Evelyn Ng?
Evelyn Ng wrote a chapter.
Really?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, he taught her how to play poker.
Right.
And so the system that he taught her was for beginners so that she could survive. So now she's conveying that in here because this is for people who don't, you know, or maybe you could be a cash game player, but you're not used to playing tournaments. This is a system for how to play. It's a real simple system.
I just saw her in an interview in which she talked about how she flew to the Philippines for a free roll tournament and busted out in 8 minutes.
Wow. Flew all the way to
18
the Philippines.
18 hours of flying, sit down, get queens.
Wow.
Re-raise, flop comes out king high, you end up with all your money in the middle, the guy's got ace king, you're out the door.
Well, I'm actually going to be interviewing her next week, so look for that Q&A in our Ante Up magazine coming September, so maybe I'll be sure to ask her about that.
Yeah, it won't be a happy memory for her.
Well, if I want to piss her off, I'll make sure I'll, you know, bring that up.
All right, Chris, we got some housekeeping to take care of before we move on to the rest of the show. You've got big news about our MySpace page, right?
We have reached 300 friends.
Very good.
Today, we reached 300 friends. Now, when people say, oh, big deal, you know, Tila, Katila, whatever the hell her name is, she's got a million. That's, we don't accept anybody.
Yeah, well,
only,
we're not as pretty.
That's right. We only accept people who are serious about poker, and it's taken us this long, but we reached 300 friends.
Way cool.
And one of those friends, Todd Brunson, invited me to be part of his mafia family.
Ooh.
So I joined. They got this game
AJ
on there
Benz
called
is
Mafia.
Not gonna like that.
Well, he may be a part of it, too. Oh, I don't know. But it's called, like, Mafia Wars, and it's some, like, role-playing, you know, first-person shooting gamer. I don't know. You got to make a Mafia family. I haven't really looked into it yet, but we are members of Todd Brunson's Mafia family.
Ah, and you can't refuse that offer.
No, you cannot refuse that offer at all.
And then real quick, we haven't talked about Apes.
No.
It's been a couple weeks. But LJ47, double banana winner.
Yep.
In Raz.
Yep.
And our next one's coming up Saturday, July 26th.
And
noon Eastern.
It's the combo one, right?
It is. Pot Limit Ha.
Pot Limit Ha.
I still it's not a comedy that. Club.
I still don't understand the A part of that. Omaha. Well, ha, I guess.
Because O is Omaha 8, so they had to use the A for straight Omaha.
It's just weird.
Yeah, but it's
A. Anyway.
Half Hold'em, half Omaha High.
Yep. I'm excited about that.
Noon Eastern on Full Tilt. Password is Ante Up.
And it's $5 plus 50 cents for Full Tilt because, you know, they have this random card generator they have to have upkeep on.
Got
to
feed the beast.
So you know what? We got a hotline clip today.
Great.
It's a very important one. We have to play it.
All right.
I'm just going to let it roll right now.
Hey, Chris and Scott. Static Kling here. Congratulations on the new adventure. And I'm going to have to get the new hotline number to call you guys back with later in July. because, you know, that's the 90 days later. I haven't forgot. I know exactly what I'm supposed to call and leave a message, but I don't have a number yet. But I'm sure that will be on, what is it, antiupmagazine.com, the new Florida magazine, poker magazine, that's the bomb diggity. Holy crap, did I just say bomb diggity? Oh, well. Now you know I'm a card, too. But whatever. Congrats again, and talk to you later. Bye.
Did he say bomb diggity?
He's one of those guys who, when he talks to a machine, he's talking like he's talking to a person who's not there.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
So for those who don't remember, Static Clean called in when we were doing our show about the delayed final table. So he says he's going to call back in 90 days with how he feels about it. So we're waiting with anticipation. So
and just to anger him, too, we're going to wait a week before we give our new hotline number.
Yeah, we do have a new hotline number. you can still call the old one if you want for another week or so. But we do have a new hotline number, and we're going to reveal it next week just to tick off Static Cling.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the broken seesaw. Once again, it's early in a multi-table tournament. The field is wild and loose. It's folded around to the button, who makes a standard 3x big blind raise. The small blind folds, and the big blind, me, looks down at, wow, two aces. In this type of instance, I see little value in raising to induce a fold. I already have isolation, a big hand, and a small pot. But just to build a little bit of a pot, I min-raise him.
Why not tempt him? Eh? Now he's forced to play.
Pot is 500 when we see a flop of two of spades, five of diamonds, ace of spades. Wow, top set. Yes, I know it's a two-spade board, but I'm not going to lose him now. I check. He quickly checks behind.
Somehow, I don't think he's in a rush.
The turn is the eight of diamonds. Now, I don't see how that card can make him a monster. I decide to set up a river play and just check. He again checks behind.
You guys looking for something?
The river was a two of hearts, and that's a great card because now I'm holding a monster. I'm going to try and make a bet that looks like a simple pick-up-the-pot bet, and I basically bet 400 into 500. After a small pause, the button min-raises me.
Now that's a pleasant surprise.
Indeed. Our opponent has 2,000 left, and we have 2,700 left. The last raise was 400, the pot is 1,700. So now I ask you, are you afraid of anything? And if not, how much of a raise will he call?
Afraid of anything?
What? There's only
one hand that could beat you.
One hand. What could you possibly be afraid of? So obviously we need to... And if I remember correctly now, last week I talked about the title going up and down, back and forth seesaw. Broken seesaw means that it's going back and forth, and if you don't... You know what I mean? So I'm thinking for him to come back, the only way you can bet here is to make a minimum bet. Because if you shove, I don't think that... I think I would rather just min-raise again, see what happens.
There's absolutely no way he's got...
Pocket twos.
Pocket deuces. There's no way he would let the... I mean, I'm questioning even Columbo letting the flop go, or flop and turn go without a bet.
Yeah.
There's no way this guy...
No way.
...is going to give free cards when he's got bottom set. So, we got the best hand. So, yeah,
and I think
right.
I said this last week, too. If he has quads, more power to him. I want to go home on this hand. By out, you know what I mean? At least I didn't go home with like King 7 in my hand. So what do you think, Mike?
Hey, what does that mean with King 7? Is that some kind of crack?
No, oh, why? Why?
That's a very particular hand, Mr. Cosenza.
What are you talking about?
And I don't think that that's appropriate for you to bring up that hand.
Wow. What are you talking about?
I told him something in the parking lot that involved the hand with King 7.
I totally forgot about that.
He totally forgot about it. He brings it up and he puts it in my face again.
Needling
you. I'm dead serious. Look at
That was not an accident, King 7. That was not an accident.
I swear to God it was an accident.
You're on notice.
Wow.
We're going to war. I am dead serious. I did not mean to bring that up. I remember the hand you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later.
I'm dead serious, dude.
King 7, just out of the blue, that just happens to come out of his mouth. Anyway.
It's a random hand.
Why would you min raise? Why don't you like triple a bet?
Oh, because of how much money was left. Triple in the bet puts him all in anyway.
Oh, I see.
He only had like 2,700 or whatever. Okay. The guy min raised to like 800, so triple in that is 24. So.
Mm. All right, I'll go with you. I'm going to min raise here, too.
All right, let's listen to part two.
Welcome back.
You know, I don't think we need to be afraid of anything here, sir.
There's little doubt in my mind he'll call any bet I make here. Although if I make anything short of an all-in, he may stop and think, and I don't want that. And I don't want to rush my chips to the pot either and tip him off that I was resigned to getting my chips in there already.
Not to get off the subject, but...
So I take 10 seconds or so and let him think that I'm thinking about it, and then seemingly resigned to my fate, I move all in. He quickly calls and then quickly mucks, so we can only speculate about what he had.
We know his alibi doesn't hold water. Neither does my kiddie pool.
Until next time, this is Glumbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you that sometimes the decision isn't who's ahead, but how to extract the money.
Well, the thing is, though, on Full Tilt, you can click on a little thing up in the upper left-hand corner that says Last Hand, and it will show you what he had.
I'm pretty sure this is a live hand.
Oh, it was a live hand?
Yeah, it was a live tournament.
Quickly mocked.
I thought it was a Full Tilt tournament.
No, it was a live tournament.
All right. Well.
Thanks for your contribution.
So thanks for...
No, but I'm just saying that if you ever want to know what somebody has at Showdown and they muck, you can see it. And I got into a hand yesterday on a 1-2 limit game, six-handed. I raised on the button with aces. I mean, I re-raised.
Re-raised.
To three bets. It was capped. Three-way action all the way to the river. I'm betting and raising the whole way. And I find out that the guy who three bet and then raised me and blah, blah, hit a pair of fours on the flop. And
that was it?
That was it. He had like 2-4. He was going to the wall with 2-4. I was shocked that my aces held up in a three-way pot. Right.
Sometimes you just got to pick a hand.
You just got to pick a hand. Wow. Like King 7.
Hey, this is AJ Benz, and you're listening to Annie Up. Same. Ain't it a bitch?
Now, honestly, I didn't bring up King 7 for anything. I don't know what the
How did that come out of your mouth?
I don't know. I just picked up a high card and a low card.
Let me go through this hand.
Let me emphasize, boys.
Let me go through this hand. I called Scott on the middle of the trip, and I said, hey, I'm over here at Caesars. I'm going to play the deep stack. It's like $230. You get 7,500 chips, 50-minute levels. I'll get some value out of this, even if I, don't cash, which I don't expect to.
Uh-huh.
Whoosh! I was out the door in level two. But the hand that crippled me was really one of the worst hands I've ever played in my life. And
that's saying something.
And it tells you how you can get stuck with a hand that you're in the blind with. I got King 7 in the big blind. The under the gun, or plus one, limps, and then another guy limps after him. And we're at like 50 and 100, and we've got like 6,000 chips in front of us on average.
Yeah, you're getting good value out of this tournament. You've made it a level two.
So, three-way action. I've got King 7 in the big blind. I check my option, and the flop comes down. King 5 deuce, let's just say.
You see how confused he is? This is how he was in the parking lot, too.
No, King 5 deuce, rainbow, all right? So, I've got a king. But I'm not real sure if it's any good. So I decide what I'm going to do is I'm going to check and see what the other two guys do. All right? So there's 600 in the pot. Or what is there in the pot? There's 300 in the pot plus the small blind. So the first guy who limped bets like a standard 200. A standard bet.
Okay.
Player two calls. Now, I have checked, and I've got top pair, so I think, okay, let me just see where I'm at in this hand. I'm going to go ahead and put in a raise. So I take it from 200 to like 550 or something or whatever. They both call. So at this point, the bell should be going off in my head, right?
But it's not.
What?
But it's not.
But it's not.
Right.
The bell does not go off. The bell does not go off.
I love when someone gives them self advice afterward. The bell should be going off in my head, but it's not.
What are they calling with? There's no draw out there. There's right. there's a ridiculous wheel draw, right. And then there's no flush draw, and then there's a king out there.
Right.
So what in the hell are they calling a check raise with? So that didn't work. So at this point, I should be done with the hand, right?
Right.
Wrong. So the
you're trying to get value out of this tournament.
The tournament, the turn comes a jack. And I'm thinking, okay, that is good in a way because it could potentially promote my kicker, right?
That, when you're grasping at straws and you're hoping the jack maybe will improve your kicker.
That is a beautiful
depending
analysis.
On the river. That is just terrible.
So I don't remember exactly how this went, but I think I bet out. I think I bet out like 1,000.
Uh-huh.
And I think they both called me again. And I think there was like a little tinkling in the back of my head that maybe I was starting to perceive at this point that said, maybe my king's no good.
That's what my mom does when she goes to the bathroom. There's a little tinkling
so,
in the bathroom.
So get this. The river is probably the worst card in the deck for me. It's a 5, which pairs the board, promotes my 7 to a jack kicker.
Yeah, which is what you were pulling for.
And that's what I was pulling for. So on the river, I check. Next player bets 1,500. Player after him calls. Now, how can I even call this bet now? I've made so many mistakes in this hand, but then the final mistake is I'd call.
Yeah.
And player number 2 turns over ace king.
Yeah.
I don't know what player 3 had because he mucked.
Yeah, king queen.
He probably had king queen. I turn over king 7. I actually expose the hand, believe it or not, thinking I might get paid a chop or whatever. And a guy down at the end of the table who wasn't involved in the hand, who was a pretty good player, I could tell, he just looked at me like I was nuts. He was like looking at me like his eyes turned into saucers. They were so big. He was like, what are you doing with that king 7 down there? So anyway.
Mike, if it was possible, you finished 4th in that hand. That was pretty bad.
That was a horrible, horrible, horrible hand.
Yeah.
But I have other hands that I played better.
But you did play tournaments better, too.
The Binion's Limit Tournament.
Yes.
And I mentioned on the forum that under your sign-on, I wrote a little thing about how I played like Frank Henderson, where when it got down toward the bubble, meanwhile, Scott gets towards the bubble, and he decides to put his life on the line with ace-10. Meanwhile, I get down toward the bubble, and I decide to fold my way into the money. That's the difference between the two of us. But I looked up Frank Henderson's stats on the Hendon Mob, and he cashed in this same limit tournament. He finished 7th in 2007. And I finished 8th in 2008, one behind the master, but using his same techniques.
Wow.
I was telling people stuff I was folding, and they were like, they couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I folded
ace-10, right? Yeah.
Oh, I folded better than ace-10. I could have gotten into a pot with ace-jack suited in middle position in an unraised pot, and I folded it on the bubble. Wow. I folded pocket 7s under the gun on a full table.
No, that one definitely.
But and people were scratching their heads and they couldn't believe it. People were running over my blinds right and left. But I didn't care.
Were you revealing what you were folding before or after the hand was over?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. At what point were you telling them about your hands?
Well, I told him some of them at the dinner
during
break.
During breaks.
Oh, okay,
yeah, when Scott and I were at the table with this woman and she had taken some beats and had a lot of chips, and then she had almost none. And I said, I folded pocket 7s. I could have been first in with 7s, and I folded that. Isn't that a terrible fold? Isn't that really super tight? And she goes, yeah, that's awful. Meanwhile, I cashed, and she did. Yeah.
So,
so
anyway. What else happened out there? Anything exciting?
Well, we also played the horse tournament at the Golden Nugget.
Uh-huh.
And I think both these tournaments were very well run, I thought. I was very impressed
with
both. The Nugget has a new big, huge room called the Grand.
Uh-huh.
And their series was called the Grand. And right. It was a great place to hold a tournament. Binion's, of course, is Binion's. But they gave you a free dinner.
They gave you a dinner. And
of course, you had to make it to the dinner break to get the free dinner.
I liked both those tournaments, and the Nugget did a good job, too. The only thing I would change about the Nugget, I like the idea of a horse tournament where you play 8 hands of each game and then move on, rather than timed limits for each game. because we played 20 or 30 hands of Hold'em and maybe yes. 5 or 6 hands of stud eight.
Yeah.
So
you
don't get as much of the off games as I would like if you did it on a rotation basis. But
one thing, Mike, you got to stop doing is speaking in ultimatums. As soon as you cash in that tournament, you guys get you on the phone. You're like, Scott and I have agreed. Limit is the best game ever. I am never going to play No Limit Hold'em again. The next day, he plays in that deep stack and goes out in half an hour.
But here's the thing. I told Scott this while we were out there. There's a big difference between Limit and No Limit players. And
yes,
when you play in these Limit events, you'd never run into somebody like you see all over these No Limit tournaments. Like I said to Scott, it would be inconceivable if someone made a smooth eight in the Raz round in the Limit tournament for him to get up on his chair and go, "That's what I'm talking about, sucker!" You know, like that, like you would see in a No Limit tournament. It just doesn't happen.
One time! Give me a tray!
There was a funny thing. I was playing at the Rio in the 4-8 game and at the Amazon room, and there was a very pretty young lady next to me, and she was having bad luck, and she said something
starting
about
with being right next to
me. But she the dealer mucked her hand once when she had pocket queens, and she even put a chip on top of it, and the dealer still mucked it and then scrambled the muck, so we couldn't find the cards. She said, you know, some guy was saying at the 4-8 table, he's like, one time, and she said, you know, I think if I'm going to have my one time, I don't want it to be at a 4-8 table. I think I'll take my one time somewhere else. Which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh, that's great. Well, and of course, Chris, I played a lot of Binions.
Yeah.
You know, I love that room.
Yep.
And a couple things I love most about the room. One, you always run into characters down there.
Yep.
It's like playing in a cartoon. And that's great. So I had two characters I'm going to tell you about.
Okay.
One was the first day down there. They were dealing a 3-6 horse game, which was great this time out. They had horse everywhere. Played both at Caesars and at Binion's. But we had a Mr. Cranky was in the horse game. Now, of course, that doesn't narrow it down at Binion's because generally myself and a couple of dealers are the only non-cranky people at Binion's.
Right.
But this guy was king of the crankies.
Okay.
All right, so I sit down at the 3-6 horse table, and immediately the guy to my right says, after the stud 8 rotation, we're going to play deuce to 7 triple draw, low ball.
What?
I'm like, all right, that's cool. I don't get to play that anywhere but in the home game. I'm fine with it. So two more people sit down, and he tells them both that. And then finally, Mr. Cranky, who's been there probably since Binion's opened,
he is Binion. He's Benny Binion's dad.
He barks out, "Why are we playing deuce to 7 low ball? It's horse. What letter is deuce to 7 and horse?" And then everybody's just kind of like, all right, crazy. And they ignore him, which is great, because that's what you have to do at Binion's, because you can't engage these people in conversation.
Right.
So he keeps constantly coming back to this. He's like, I don't know why you would sit down in a horse game if you're not going to play horse. If you want to play something else, just play anything. You want to play $5,000 pot limit Omaha? Let's do that right now. Why not? So then he's like, well, what if we played ace to 5 low ball? I'll play that. I'm not going to play that crazy deuce to 7 stuff.
That's so different.
And then he just starts, and he's like, what about that? And he looks around the table, and everybody's like, no, dude, we're playing deuce to 7. Oh, all right, I'm going to sit out then. I'm just going to sit out. And everybody's like, all right, that's cool, because somebody's going to sit out every deal anyhow, so they're just going to make it easier on us. So he just kept going on like that, and he's like, I'll play any game you want, except the fact that he doesn't want to play the one game that
everyone wants to play.
That started this. So that was Mr. Cranky.
Okay.
So, you know, I got up and I left before the deuce to 7 actually got to that because we had the tournament. And I'm like, you know, have fun, sir.
Right.
And then the next day I came back and they had an Omaha 8 game going on. And I sit down and I got the pleasure of sitting next to Mr. Helpful. Mr. Helpful.
Hey, was his first name Always?
Yes.
Mr. Always
yes.
Helpful?
Well, everybody's a gentleman down there. So Mr. Helpful is the guy that, you know, when the cocktail waitress comes up, he lets her know what everybody ordered at the table.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she probably didn't write that down and really has no idea.
She hasn't been slinging drinks for 20 years.
Exactly. So, you know,
anybody
very
want
helpful.
A drink here? Anybody want a drink here? Remember her? She's always out there.
She's still out there. It's great.
That's why I never tip her.
You don't need a reason not to tip.
That's just another reason.
Mr. Helpful, of course, likes to read the hands for the dealer, too, because the dealer can't read the hands.
That's right.
And it doesn't faze Mr. Helpful at all that he doesn't know how to read an Omaha 8 hand, but he's right in there mixing up, telling people who's got the low and the high, and pushing pots to the wrong people.
Chop it up, dealer, chop it up.
Exactly. And then, of course, you know, Mr. Helpful means that everybody has to get into it. So, no, you don't have a pair of
Wait a minute, he's got a live
nines.
Three.
Exactly, yeah. And the best thing about Mr. Helpful is he had this, like, I call it kind of like the chimney sweeper hat on. It may have been just like a bowler cap, I guess, is probably more like it, but chimney sweeper sounds more fun. And, of course, you know, a couple of people sat down, nice hat, and it made Mr. Helpful feel a little more helpful that, you know, he's bringing joy to the world as he was confusing the hell out of the hands for everyone. But he and his wife, who was in the one seat, went through probably, I'm estimating, in the two times I played with them, roughly $12,000 of the 360. I'm being conservative. Maybe it was closer to $15,000.
And yet you still came home a loser.
Worst players ever. And yes, isn't that the worst when you sit down next to people that have no idea how to play the game they're playing?
If you can't beat them.
Think they do, which is even better. And you can't pick up a hand or you can't get into a pot with them. And every time they reach in the wall and peel off another bend, it goes straight to somebody else at the table. Frustrating beyond belief.
Frustrating. Speaking of Omaha, at the Venetian, I was telling Chris about this earlier in the week, and you may have heard about it too, because I've been telling anyone who will listen to me. I had a hand which, in Omaha 8, on the turn, drawing to the river, I had the following. I had one nut flush draw. I had a second nut flush draw. I had a nut load draw, and I had a wrap. And none of it got there on the river. It was like a $300 pot, which I got no
piece
of. You
had a bag of chips.
It was a bag of chips, and I had no piece of it. No piece of it on the river. I think we figured out there was like one card in the deck that I couldn't hit.
So you hit your one-outer.
I hit my one-outer, my reverse one-outer. But I ran into some interesting people at the South Point. That's where I stayed. And usually when people are talking back to me and getting snide comments and things like that, I get angry. But in this case, I really needed to step back and think about what these two punks were saying, because it really made an impression on me the more I thought about it. They were playing in the 3-6 with a half kill hold'em game at the South Point. They were young, and they were friends. One of them was skinny with a baseball hat. The other one was Mr. Doughball with no baseball hat.
Doughball?
And they were driving action. This was a great game. The pots were like piled up to your eyeballs because they were doing straddles. They were popping. They were 2 and 3 betting all the time. They were driving the action. And I got angry with them once because one of them had the kill button, and I thought he checked his option, and then his buddy raised, and then when it got back around to the kill button, the guy 3-bet it. And I said, "You guys know each other, right?" And the guy goes, "Is there a problem with that?" And I said, "Well, not necessarily, but I mean, you just checked your option, and then your buddy bet, and then you 3-bet behind him." And they said, "The option is last." I had been playing where the option was in order on the kill button. Here, the option got the last action unless it was a raise.
As it should be.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, and these were these two guys. They were constantly whispering to one another, which I don't like either. Yeah. You know, they're like making snide remarks back and forth. But I picked up this one little sentence from the skinny guy after I had made this complaint about their tag team play. You know, I thought, well, are they going to chop it up in the parking lot or what's going on here? But it turns out they weren't. But He said to
because you followed him into the parking lot.
he said to his skinny said to fatty. He said under his breath, not thinking I could pick it up. He said something to the effect of, "We ought to play like you want some chips." And I thought about it for a second, and I said, "These guys are right. I'm sitting here like a nit. If I want to play like I need to play like I want some damn chips.
Right.
That's how I need to play to win to beat this game.
Yeah.
I don't need to be sitting back and like smooth calling and limping. And you know, this was a big action game they were providing, and it was a benefit to the whole table if you just got in there and mixed it up.
Yeah.
So I agree with the skinny kid. I needed to play like I wanted chips instead of playing like a puss. So I agree with the guy, and I did not get angry, and more power to you guys. So,
and how did you do?
I lost. No, I just lost a little bit, actually, at that 3-6 game. But there were some terrible players there,
yeah.
And people even more nitty than me.
Wow.
So
that's possible.
If possible.
Wow, nitty-gritty bear.
This was like the home game with Scott, because it was like the dog and pony show all over again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like raise, through bet, three bet, cap it, flop comes out like 2-3-4, and we both got paint, and it's like raise, cap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
So can we get to the piece de resistance?
What's that?
The Annie Up meetup?
Yes. Yeah, sadly, the Annie Up meetup was a two-person affair. Mike and I sat and talked about the dealer-tainers at the Imperial Palace.
I watched the woman do the Aretha Franklin at the dealer-tainer stage at the Ip. She was fantastic.
Right, and the Shakira, she was shaking her hips. It was pretty nice.
And the Tony Orlando, I really didn't care for that much.
So I'm going to take this as a huge ego boost that unless I'm there, no one shows up.
Yeah, but you know what? Just because we didn't have a meetup does not mean that we did not meet listeners.
Right,
and we
had
a great time. The first night I was in town, I played with last year's Apes Player of the Year, Corey Furby.
Excellent.
C. Furby. And also Rant showed up, and we played. Rant and I were killing a 4-8 limit game before they opened a 4-8 horse game. We got all excited. And then we dragged Corey into that, too, and the horse game did not go well, starting with the $6 a half-hour time charge at Caesars for a 4-8 limit game.
That's weird.
WTF.
LOL.
It was great to see them. When we finally gave up on the meetup, we went over to the Venetian and got the Ray Oldie Childs for a little bit in the Deep Stack tournament. Got
to talk to him for a little bit. He cashed in that.
You know, he never told me. He never texted me to Mac.
Oh.
So he left me hanging.
You know, he's too big time for us.
He is.
He doesn't talk to us. He doesn't do anything.
He texted me all weekend, but I never get the results. So. That's gravy cash. Perfect.
Yep.
And then the last day I left, I got to meet Short Stacks Seamus.
Excellent.
Who's out there covering the series for Poker News.
Yep. Yep.
Great guy there, too. So so just because we didn't have the meetup, Chris, don't worry about it.
Okay. You still met listeners. You just didn't meet
a lot of the Nationals.
But there was another story that I kind of left me puzzled.
Okay.
Scott and I went to Binion's Steakhouse because he had a 2-for-1 coupon.
Yeah.
Gotta love Scott, don't you? You just gotta love him.
So we're done eating, and Scott is paying with his credit card, and I'm giving him the cash for my portion, and it was very good. And he does that little signature on his credit card.
Yes,
slip.
I've been seeing him sign things all week.
It looks like a little wave.
Yeah,
it's just like a squiggle.
I don't know what that is.
So I said, Scott, you know that signature is really pathetic. So I said to him, I want you to turn over this slip, and I want you to write your name down in real letters, like in cursive. Do you know what that means, Scott? And he takes the pen, and we're sitting there. Luckily, no one was nearby. He takes the pen and he goes, I forgot how to make a cursive S. I think it's like that. Let me just explain something to you. You are going into business, into a magazine venture with someone who is a functional illiterate. Now, how sick is that?
How stupid am I?
Believe it or not, I mean, this was like watching a 3-year-old trying to write their name. He's like, an S? How do you make a T? I mean, this L. He didn't know how to write his name.
Oh, man.
I know how to write my name. I don't know how to write my name the way you in society wants me to.
Oh, I see. It's society's thing.
Exactly. I'm fighting the good fight.
How do I make a cursive S?
Scott
that
and I,
really was the kicker.
Scott and I are at the bank, okay, and we're getting ready to make our big deposit. This is it. We're in it for the life now. So the teller or whatever he is, the manager, he gives us
the bank manager, please.
He gives us stuff to sign, right? So this is the first time I'm seeing Scott sign his name, and he does the wave.
Right.
I don't mean the wave like you do at a baseball game. I mean he writes the wave. I look at it and I said, oh, "What were you just checking to see if the pen had ink?" You know. He's like, "No, that's my signature." I said, "What?" He goes, "If you look real hard, there's an S there."
Oh,
that's what
right.
he said. I can't believe you brought this up because this happened like 2 days ago.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, he will only do that at gunpoint, apparently. write his name the way you should write it. I guess that's...
That is classic.
That was sick.
Not that it has anything to do with poker, but...
yeah.
Still
yeah.
funny nonetheless.
Well, it happened at Binion's. Anybody want a drink here? Something to drink here.
All right, guys. Well,
right,
I'm
so
glad you're
week,
back.
I'll give a good report on the World Series Expo. I got a lot of good interviews
yes.
out there with a lot of great new poker products out there. We'll do that on next
it
week.
It may
show.
Even be a two-parter.
It could be a two-parter.
Could be a two-parter.
A lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, we're busy men now. We want to milk it for all we can.
This is Jean Cosenza, and you're listening to Annie Up, and you are feeding Christopher Cosenza's ego.
All right, Chris, our hand of the week comes from a longtime listener who hasn't emailed us in a while, but he's back in the fold now, Ron Trout.
Oh, yeah.
From Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yep.
And, of course, he congratulates us on a new venture.
Thanks, Ron.
So he had quit poker for a couple months.
Smart man.
Bad beats, kind of like, you know, from your ilk.
Yes.
all right. So here's the hand. It's 1.5 hours into a 1,500 player, 5+50 tournament on PokerStars.
Ooh.
All right.
That's massive.
It's huge.
Massive.
Huge. He says he gets moved to this table about 10 hands before this one, so he has no read on anyone. Hasn't played a hand yet. There are about 300 people left. The bubble is at 240.
Mm.
All right. So he's probably been, he says 1.5 hours, but I got to think. Generally, it's like 7 hours to get down to this point to get his $5.60 payout, right? All right. So the levels are 150, 300. There's a quarter ante. It's eight-handed. And our hero is under the gun, plus one, with ace of spades, jack of hearts. All right. So the under gun folds. It comes to him. He raises to 1,000.
Hmm. You know, I don't know. I think it'd be boring for me to say this, but I mean, I might fold that hand.
Might? I would.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. All right. I would fold that hand.
And because I, you know, I've been.
How many chips does he have?
Our hero has 15,076.
Yeah, I like the raise. I
fold.
Fine.
Well,
here's
you went
the thing.
With King Seven, Mike.
You're
so.
Close to the bubble. It's Ace Jack.
Well, this is
under the gun plus one.
Depends on the other stacks at the table, but you could be in a position where you're punishing the smaller stacks and picking up the antes.
Okay, he's got the end of the gun who folded had him covered, and one other player hasn't covered.
Yeah.
But he's got everybody else at the table covered.
I just want to know what these people play like, and he doesn't know yet. I just don't know if you know they're going to respect me sitting down that quickly and raising under the gun plus one, and then with ace jack, it's a trap hand.
It is.
I mean, I know we...
Not as bad as Ace 10.
We all joke around about Ace 10. Of course, you beat me to it before I could say it, because you're always cutting me off. My mother's going to give you a letter in the mail that's going to explode if you cut through that
sign
one
it?
More time. So, yeah, she'll sign it, but she can spell a cursive S. So, but really, I mean, Ace Jack, under the gun, plus one, and you're that close to the bubble. I agree with Scott. I probably would have folded it, or... Maybe limped and let them not realize what kind of hand I have. But I just
now
would
you're
folded.
Talking double crazy.
Well, I wouldn't have raised with it. I would have folded or limped, and I probably wouldn't limp. So.
All right, but he raised 1,000. Of course, he gets two callers.
Okay, two callers. So there's $3,000 in the pot, maybe a little more.
Yeah, 3,650.
Yeah.
Flop comes ace of hearts, five of clubs, two of diamonds. First act, we got a race, but that's the trap part of it,
that's
right?
That's the trap part of it.
We'd almost rather get their jack.
Because you know an ace-queen or an ace-king can call that behind you, and it seems to me that they're not in the blinds. So they're calling in, you know, late position and
yeah,
middle position.
First act, so.
Yeah.
All right, so he bets 2,500.
Well, if we're going to play the hand, that's the right amount to bet. So I agree with that.
Yep.
All right, we're in agreement. All right.
Yeah, we showed strength, and we're continuing, and we hit our hand. What more could we want? So we got to bet.
We get one fold, and a call. So we're heads up, going to the turn, 9 of clubs. Okay. 8650 in the pot.
So now there's a flush draw out there. But I still would bet. How much is in the pot, you said?
8650.
I probably would. See, this is tough now, because now you're looking at 25% of your stack. You might as well shove.
Yeah, you're getting
so, and this is the part where this is what you wanted to avoid, being so close to the bubble. You're looking at thinking about shoving here now. You know, if you check, he's going to take it away from you. Then what do you do? So this is the whole reason why I didn't want to get involved with his hand. You know, you want, if you're going to be on the bubble and you're going to play a hand, you're going to want to play this. It's got to be a hand that you're going to want to play to the end, no?
Yeah, in particular, you're going to want to be in position to this close to the bubble, right?
Exactly.
You're in such a tough spot here because you don't have position, you don't have a read, and now you've got a hand where you've hit it.
Yep, I totally agree.
To some degree.
I think that I guess we have to bet like a third of the pot here, like $2,500.
But, all right, I think our hero is now realizing the folly of getting involved in this hand and checks.
Yeah.
The bet behind him is 2,100, and he calls it.
That's a pretty small bet.
That's a small bet. I mean, it sounds like it's a I want you to call me bet, though, because I have ace king or something like that. But if you were willing to bet 20, I was willing to bet 2,700, so I would call 2,100 and see what happens on the river.
Okay.
Maybe I make two pair, or maybe my hand gets improved. I don't know. But
river is the 3 of clubs.
Of course it is, because that doesn't help us at all.
That completes 2 draws.
Yeah, it completes 2 draws.
All right, so you're not putting another dime in this pot, right?
I'm going to check fold.
Okay, well, the good thing is it goes check, check.
Oh, good.
So you don't have to worry about folding. But sadly, his opponent had...
Ace king?
Ace queen.
Ace queen, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
You know, because I was telling Mike before we went out to Vegas that I was rereading Howard Lederer's Limit Hold'em chapter in the Full Tilt Poker Strategy Guide. And, of course, there's a no-limit hand. But I think he makes a good point that you need to have really good hands under the gun to even get involved in the pot.
Yep. All right. Well, another lesson learned. And again, I am trying to get away from the ace-10 is the Cosenza thing, which you keep bringing it up. Shoving it in my face.
Keeps haunting us.
I want to thank Mike for not only coming back from Vegas safe and sound, but for coming back to the studio with us and just making the show that much better.
My pleasure.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of Annie Up Magazine and is edited by Chris Cosenza. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. Broadcasting from antiupmagazine.com in Tampa Bay, Florida,
with your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to ante up. Oh, no, I forgot the date. This is all weird, man. I'm not used to doing this. All right, overtime.
Good thing we're not depending on this for our livelihood.